Top of Daf Ayin Heim Aleph, Omar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia Omar Rav, Hamoteach Chut Shel Tfir B'Shabbos Chayv Chatos. So he stretches the thread of a stitch on Shabbos and he's Chayv. He pulls taut a long thread to tighten two pieces of garments that have been partially separated one from another. And essentially, he has sewn the garment. Halomed dover echad min hamagush chayev misa. If somebody learns one thing from a heretic, he's chayev misa, because we're not allowed to learn Torah from a heretic. We might be influenced to practice idolatry. Vayodeh lechashev tkufos imazolos. The Eino Choshev is Osu L'Sapre Menu. Someone who knows how to calculate the astronomical progression of the seasons, the celestial positions of the constellations, and he doesn't calculate them, Osu L'Sapre, we're not allowed to relate Torah in his name. So the mathematical calculations of the movements of the sun and the heavenly bodies and how this affects climate and other seasonal changes on earth. So we're not allowed to quote a ruling in his name. And the Gemara is going to try to explain this. Now Rav Zutra cites these three statements together. Only the first one relates to sewing. He's learning from Rav. And he learned all of them from Rav apparently at the same time. So the Gemara asks, Magoshta, we said that he was learning from a magush. What is this Magoshta? And the Gemara says, Ravu Shmuel, Chanomar Charshi, Chanomar Gidufi. One says it's a sorcerer, and the other says it's a blasphemer. Tistayim de Rav de Omer Gidufe. It makes sense to assume that Rav was the one who said that Magoshta is a blasphemer. De Omer Rav Zutra Bar Tuvi Omer Rav Halomi Dover Min Ha Echa Min Amagush Chayv Misa Isal Kedai to Charshi. If we're talking about a sorcerer, someone who performs sorcery, is the Torah says, Haksiv lo silmad lasos, avlata lomad lomed lahovin ulahoros. Although you're not allowed to learn how to do sorcery, but you are allowed to learn in order to understand so that you can paskin shilas. So that you're not going to commit acts of sorcery, but you'll be able to rule. Let's say, for example, you know, you have a sorcerer who's being accused of sorcery, then a machshef has to be put to death. How could Rav categorically rule out the possibility of learning something from a sorcerer? Is this time, therefore, we should conclude that Rav holds a magush that means a blasphemer. Rashi also mentions here that somebody presents himself as if he's a miracle performer and he's a prophet and we want to expose him. So he does these so-called miracles. We have to learn about sorcery to figure out whether or not he's doing sorcery and it's appearing as a miracle and he's claiming he's a prophet. So again, he's not learning for the sake of learning about sorcery for the sake of practicing sorcery, but rather in order to rule on cases, or as we said before, to expose a false prophet as a sorcerer. Now let's go back to Mar Zutra. Omar Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Omar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum bar Kapora, Kol Yodea Lechashev Tkufos Mazolos, Vieno Choshev. Those who are capable, they have the knowledge to calculate the progression of the seasons, the position of the constellations, and he doesn't calculate them. is Olav HaKosev Omer. The Pasuk says, in Yeshayo Anovi, V'yeis Poel Hashem Lo Yabitu Umase Yodov Lo Ro. The work of God they did not regard, and the action of His hands they do not see. When someone studies the movements of the sun and the constellations, he'll gain some understanding of the greatness of God. Hashamayim Misaprim Kvod Kel, who set the constellations, the sun, etc., into place. And when he realizes these heavenly bodies have no independent powers, but everything comes from God, he will see the folly of those who worship the sun, the moon, and the stars, with expectation of receiving assistance. The Rambam, in the second chapter of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, writes that this wisdom includes astronomy, intercalation of the seasons, and mathematics. And someone who knows these disciplines and does not use them to calculate the movement of the heavenly bodies has lost an opportunity to increase his love, his Ava Vashem. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omer Rav Yochanan Minayin Shem Mitzvah La'odem L'chashev T'kufos U'mazolos. From whence do we derive that there's a mitzvah that a person is obligated to calculate the progression of the seasons and the position of the constellations? Shenemar, as the Torah tells us in Sefer Vayikra, it says, Ushmartev asisem ki hi chochmaschem ubinaschem li'enei ha'amim. You shall safeguard and perform them, for it is your wisdom and discernment in the eyes of the nations. Ezi chachmu bina shileni ha'amim. Havi omer zechishuv tkufos umazolos. Which wisdom and discernment is in the eyes of the nation, meaning the nations of the world can recognize this chachma, and that's the calculation, the progression of the seasons, the position of the constellations, when a person can correctly predict the weather for the coming season. People recognize his wisdom, and predicting weather is an accomplishment by calculating the movement of the sun and the constellations. The weather is affected by the position of the sun in relationship to the stars. The Ramban writes in his Hasogos to Sefer Mitzvahs LaRambam that the word mitzvah here in this context, minayin shem mitzvah la'adam, is used loosely. We're not speaking about an obligation. We're not requiring every Jew to study the sciences to be able to calculate the movement of heavenly bodies. But rather, one merely encourages us, someone is encouraged, if he knows these sciences, to utilize his knowledge and to better his understanding and perhaps our understanding of the greatness of God. And now we go back to the Mishnah Hatzad Tzvi, Tana Rabbana, Hatzad Chilazon Vapotzo, Eino Chayev Ela Achas. If a person traps a Chilazon and he forces its blood out by squeezing it, because a Chilazon, once it's removed from the water, it would be squeezed for the blood. It had a blue dye that was used Tcheles in the construction of the Mishkan. According to Tanakhama, he's only chayev for trapping. He's not chayev for the squeezing of the blood. Rabbi Yehuda Omer chayev shtayim. Shalhei Rabbi Yehuda Omer p'tsia michlal disha. Squeezing to remove the dam is called disha. It's extracting the blood from an animal that's similar to extracting grain from its husk. And squeezing, therefore, is a tolda of disha. Amrullah, the Chacham responded, Ein p'tsia b'chlal disha. So this is one way of understanding the Chachamim, that they don't see squeezing as being a tolda, as being in the category of disha, of threshing. These are two separate pu'ulos. So the chilazon trapper cannot be chayev fedisha. So Omer Rava, my time of the Rabbanon, why do they think that you cannot be chayev fedisha? And Rava answers, kasavre, they hold that ain disha el b'gdule karka. You can only be chayev fedisha or any of its toldos, only with regard to something that grows from the ground. And a chilazon doesn't grow from the ground, obviously. It's a kind of a fish, we'll call it. And usually when we say Ein Dishal B'gduli Karka, we're referring to the Av Malach. The Toldo could expand it even to something that's not G'duli Karka. But the Gemara takes the position here that with regard to Disha, there's no such thing as a Toldo to anything but G'duli Karka. Again, this is going to be very problematic when we get to the Sugya of Cholev. Somebody milks a cow and he's Chayv Mishum Disha. And unless we consider an animal as Gedule Karka, that seems to be a stretch. Maybe because the animal grows from the Karka. It sustains itself from the Karka. So the Gemara asks, V'lechayev nami mishum netil seshama? It's a question both according to Tanakama and Rabbi Yehud, the only two candidates here in the case of Potseach Ilazon were Tseda and Disha. What about netil seshama? He's putting this fish to death. On Rabbi Yochanan, shepotso mace. That the case of this brisa is where the chilazon was already dead, and he's squeezing out the blood while it's dead, or after it's dead, and therefore there's no netilas neshama. So that when you squeeze out blood, you kill someone. You kill the chilazon, but if the chilazon is already dead, obviously you can't be chayv for netilas neshama if it's already dead. Now, what about just simply taking the chilazon out of the water? Would that be mechayv him for netilas neshama? So the Ritva actually addresses this question. He says, one normally removes fish from the sea in a pail of water. And in that case, the chilazon would die only from the squeezing. And some Rishonim understand that he's not liable for taking the chilazon out of the water because it threshes about and it brings about its own death. Now, as far as taking the chilazon's life is concerned, is he considered a miskaven? So Rava says, "Afilu teim b'tzol chai." Even if the chilazon is alive, I don't have to accept Rabbi Yochanan and say chetimtza, but he would still not be chayev for netilas neshama because misasik waits on netilas neshama. He doesn't have kavana to netilas neshama. He has no intention to take the life of a chilazon. Now that's pretty strange. I mean, he's squeezing out the blood of the chilazon and he has no intention to take its life. You could say that he's preoccupied with taking out the blood, but he's not interested in killing it. And there's no meleches machsheves. He didn't calculate the labor. He didn't have any intention for the chilazon to die. Now, we're assuming here that the word misasek in Rava is another word for davar she'enu miskaven. His intention is to squeeze out the blood of the chilazon. He has no intention for killing it. And this is a secondary consequence of his act, like the case where he's dragging the benches, and secondary consequence is that it makes furrows in the ground. So the Gemara immediately asks the following kash, Va'oma va'abayu v'irova de'amit shavayu modu rabishim b'sikreishal o'yomus, that in a case of a dovashen miskaven, if it's a psikresha, let's say you have heavy benches and you're carrying them through a soft ground in such a way that you know for sure it's going to make these furrows, then even Rav Shimon would say that you're chayev, or at least it's aser. So the psik resha means you cut off the head of a chicken and you think it's not, what are you fooling yourself? It's not going to die. So you're not chayav for davar she'eino miskaven, but if it's a psik resha, then even Rav Shimon agrees that this is called a davar miskaven. So when you cut off the head, then you know it's going to die. Here also, you're squeezing out the blood of the chilaza. You know for sure it's gonna die. So there's no p'tur here if davar she'eino miskaven. So Gemara answers shani hacha de kama de ispe neshama tfei nichale ki hechi de litzil tzive. He has vested interest to keep it alive as long as he possibly can, because the dye that is extracted from a live chilazon is a lot better quality-wise than the dye that you take after its death. The dye will be more clear. That's called solul or litzil in the active verb. So if we assume that the person is trying to keep the chilazon alive as long as he can, even while he's squeezing out the blood, because the blood of the live animal is superior to the dead one, so even when it does die, that's considered a davar she'eino miskaven. He's involved in one action, trying to prevent another action, another consequence. He's not going to be chayav for the other consequence. Now you're going to tell me it's inevitable. Well, even in a case that's inevitable, he has to have some benefit from it. If he's working against his own interests here, and that's called lo nichale, then even in a psik resha situation, it's still considered a davar she'eino miskaven. This is the famous shita sa'orach of psik resha de lo nichale, that if it's lo nichale, it goes back to a davar she'eino miskaven. That's the orach. Rashi seems to imply that if it was lo ichvasle, if he didn't care about it one way or the other, then it might be a davar miskaven, and then he'd be chai for psik resha. But Tosa's shita is that davar she'eino miskaven with a psik resha lo nichale is really a melach she'eino tzricha legufa. The Gemara says vashochto shochet mishumai chayev. Now, what's going on over here? Shochet mishumai chayev. Certainly, he should be chayev for netilas neshama. So why does the Gemara have doubts here? Why is chayev? Seino chinami, the Gemara is now going to quote Shmuel, who says, Omer mishum netilas neshama. But the chiddush is Rav. Rav omer mishum tzoveya. And he's dyeing the skin around the neck because the redness of the blood will dye the skin. So the Gemara immediately asks, mishum tzoveya in, this is on daf, ayin heyam ibeis, mishum netilas neshama lo, ema af mishum tzoveya. So when the Gemara asks Hashochet Mishumai Machayev, the Gemara wants to know, is there only one, exclusively one Moloch that he violates, namely Netilas Neshama, or can we add Meleches Tzoveya to the, to boot? And that's going to be the Machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Shmuel is going to say he's Chayev only for Netilas Neshama. Rav is going to add Tzoveya to Netilas Neshama. He's Chayev Shtayim. Now, when we go back to the Mishkan and we ask, where do we find Tzoveya in the Mishkan? We're talking about the skins of the rams. And the question is, did they have to actually shecht, slaughter the rams in order to take the hides and use them for the curtains of the Mishkan? And the Gemara apparently assumes that since the Mishnah classifies the Malacha of Netilas Neshama as Shechita, we have to assume that this was the method back in the Mishkan by which they killed the rams. They cut the esophagus and the windpipe with a special sharpened knife, and that's Shechita. Now, when the blood gushes as a result of the Shechita, it dyes the flesh around the incision, and that's the skin around the neck of the animal. What do they gain from that? The dyeing was necessary in the construction of the Mishkan, but you wonder why dyeing would be necessary with regard to the flesh around the incision? And apparently the answer is that if you were to sell the meat on the market and you want to indicate to the buyer that it's fresh meat, the fact that it's bloodstained indicates that it was recently slaughtered. And that's a positive benefit that he gets from the tzvia here. Okay, fine. Now, we have here af mishum tzoveya, correct? So when we say that shochet in the Mishnah is chayev, then we want to teach that he's chayev shtayim, says Rav, not only netil neshama, but also mishum tzoveya. Shmuel apparently says that when we talk about shochet, the Mishnah is talking about netil neshama, and the word shochet here, according to Rav, means that he's chayev not only for netil neshama, but he's chayev for tzoveya as well. Omar Rav, Milsa di Amri, Ema Bay Milsa. Let me explain what I said before. The Lolesu Dori Basroi Velakhle. So the later generations will not laugh at me. Tzoveya b'may nichale. What is he gained by dying the flesh of the animal? Nicha de Litvas Beis Hashchita Doma. That the throat where he shechts the animal be soaked with blood is good for him. So people will see it, v'lesu lizmenu mine, and they'll come and buy it from him. And as we said before, it indicates that the meat was recently slaughtered, and it's freshly slaughtered meat. That's a big plus. Now we're up to the part of the Mishka that deals with preparing a hide, meaning or, and tanning. Hamolcho, he salts it. Vama'abdo, and he tans it. Now, why these two separate molochs? The Gemara asks, Hainu molech, or moleach, v'hainu ma'abe. Salting is the same as tanning. Meaning, salting and tanning are the same. The hide is salted as part of the tanning process. It hardens the skin, transforms it into leather. Why are these two separate avos malachos? And the Gemara answers, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, the Amri Chavayu, Apik Chad Minayu, take out one of these two malachos and substitute Ayel Sirtut. Instead, insert tracing lines, and that should substitute for one of these two malachos. Now, let's just mention the Ran, that we have things like Zora, Bora, Merakid, which are all part of sorting process. Yes, they're counting as three different malachas. And here the Gemara insists that we cannot count Moleach and Ma'abed as two separate malachas. There, in the case of the sorting process, each of these malachas is performed at a different stage, Bazech or Zeh, in the process. First of all, you start with Zora, and by winnowing, you remove the chaff. Then you remove the small tsroros. That's called selecting. And that's called borer. And then we finally have merakid, which is sifting. That's done after the grain has been transferred into flour. Here, the hide does not change between the salting and the stages of the tanning process. So therefore, we have to count both salting and tanning as one malach. What is sirtut? Leather workers would trace lines in the skins to indicate the desired shape of the piece that was meant to be cut. Tracing was performed in the Mishkan to facilitate a precise cutting of the hides of the rams and the tchashim for the ureals and for the coverings over the Mishkan. Omar Rabba Barav Huna, Haiman de Molach Bisra, if somebody salts meat, Chayev Mishum Ma'abed. This is a kind of tanning. According to this Shita, there's no difference between salting a hide and salting meat. In both cases, you harden the item. And Rava disagrees. Rava Omar, Ein Ibud Bi Ochlin. Ibud is tanning. In the case of hides, it doesn't apply to foodstuff. The labor of tanning, that malacha, only applies on hides, but not on food. Again, as far as the Rabbanans are concerned, salting food would be asur, but we're talking about a Dorais and a Chiv Chatos. Omar of Ashi, Vafilu, Rabba Barav Huna, even according to Rabba Barav Huna, who says that salting meat is ma'abed lo Omar eladika boile li orcha. He needs the meat in order to go on the way. The orcha means the trip, so he has to salt the meat very heavily to preserve it. So salting is considered like salting a hide, and it's ma'abed. Aval abesa, but when he salts in the normal way because he wants to consume it, and that's for his house, lo mashvi inish milcha eitz. He doesn't want to harden it to the point that it becomes like a piece of wood. He wants it to be food, so he's not going to do a heavy salting. And he's salting it just for taste, and he's going to use just a minimum amount of salting, and that's not at all similar to tanning. The Ritva makes the comment that according to Rava, who argues, he says even heavy salting for the sake of the road and preserving it, that's not considered tanning, except in Rabbanon, because Ein Ibud Bi Ochlin. Then the Mishnah has the Malachos of Memachako, Vamachatcho. He smoothens the hide and he cuts it. Amar Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina Hashof Bein Hamudim V'Shabbos Chayev Mishum M'Machek. Person rubs the ground between the pillars on Shabbos. That's called M'Machek. So we're talking about Bein Hamudim. We're talking about the roof of a pavilion that was supported by pillars, and in between the pillars there were open spaces. And Rav Acha refers to one who walks around in between the pillars in order to smoothen the dirt floor of the pavilion, which makes the area more inviting for people to come in and to sit. Other Rishonim say that one who smoothens the ground in a house is Chai Mishum Bona. The same thing in the field would be Choresh. But the Malach of smoothing is not relevant to this action. And therefore, if Acha refers to one who rubs a hide hung on pillars in order to smooth and soften it. Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Shlosha Dvarim Sachli Rav Ashi Mishmeid Rav Yeshua Ben Levi. There were three things that were taught to me by Rav Ashi in the name of Rav Yeshua Ben Levi. Hamagarer, if a person planes, P-L-A-N-E-S, Roshei Klonsos, the top of poles, in order to sharpen them, B'Shabbos, Chayev Mishum Mechatech, that's considered cutting. Hamamoreach Retiyah B'Shabbos, if a person spreads a dressing over a wound on Shabbos, he smoothens the medication on the over the wound. Chayav mishum memachik, v'amesates esa'evin b'Shabbos chayav mishum makav b'patish. So this case of mesates is going to be a sugya later on in the 12th perek, when he chisels a stone and he planes the stone. He wants to polish the stone. The last pu'ula, the last action that he does on this stone is going to be mesates. And that becomes makav v'patish. This is the finishing touch on the stone. Omar Rav Shimon ben Kisma,
Om Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Hatzar Tzru B'Kli, he engraves an image on a Kli, on a utensil, V'amenapeach B'Kli Zchuchis, he blows a glass utensil, Chayv Mishum Makav Patish. And this is a big chiddush, because normally we say makav patish is after the kli is already formed. Like, for example, in the first case of Tzar Tzur B'Kli, he has a full-fledged kli, and now he's beautifying it with engravings. That's makav patish. But the second case, where he's blowing a glass utensil, that should be l'chora meleches bone, or if he's ein binyan b'kelim, and he melts down the glass, then he blows the melted glass, and that's not chayev mishum bona. I guess you're saying that ain't binyan b'kelim. So if this Gemara assumes ain't binyan b'kelim, then maybe we can justify that it's not a melech binyan here, but rather it's makav apat. She's creating something new. Om Rabbi Yehuda Haiman deshakil akufe miglime. There are certain threads that are coming out of his garment, and he removes these threads. These are dangling ends of a thread, and perhaps these threads snapped, or maybe they were part of the manufacturing, in the original manufacture of the beged. And he now breaks off these protrusions. It's Chai Mishum Makav Apat. She already has a kli, but the kli has these extra pieces of threads, etc., that you want to get rid of, and he beautifies and perfects the kli. That's Makav Apat. Shvani Mili the Kapit Alay. But this only applies if people are makbid that they shouldn't have these hanging threads. Then it becomes Makav Apat. So we're talking about Kpeda, that he would not refuse to absolutely refuse to wear the garment until he removes all these hanging threads. Or is enough that, you know, if he had his druthers, he would want to remove these threads. Hakosev shtei osios, the shear, minimum shear for ksiva is two letters, as we saw in the Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan kosav os achas gedola. If he writes a large letter on a piece of paper, v'yesh b'mekoma lichtov shtayim, and there's plenty of room for two letters, small letters, potur, he only wrote one letter. Mochakos gedola, v'yesh b'mekoma lichtov shtayim, chayim. But in the case of mochek, if he erases a large letter, then to prepare the parchment for writing two letters, so that's called Mochek almanas lichtov shteosios, and he's chayev. And now we're up to habone, hasoser, hamachabe, hamavir, hamakav patish, rabba verabzera, diamri chavayu, kol midi de ispe gmar molocha chay mishumakav patish. So on this list, we are building, demolishing, extinguishing, kindling, and finally, makav patish. And makav patish means something that he does at the culmination of a labor, and basically the finishing touch on an object, which is essentially a kli already complete. The Mishnah concludes by saying, Elu, Elu avos melachos. Not concludes, but after mentioning 39, it introduces the list of malachos by saying elu, these. And the word elu is a mute. And this is against the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer holds that Yechayev and Atoldu Mokam Av, and you'll see this in the first sugi Bava Kama on Daf Beis, that Rabbi Eliezer holds that if you violate an av and a tolda, you're going to be chayv shtayim. You have to bring two chatos. When the Mishnah says elu avos melachos, it's coming lafuke this shita of Rabbi Eliezer. So we said that the maximum number of chatos you be chayv is 39. That's not true according to Rabbi Eliezer, because if you do an Avin, it's told you have two separate chatos. And here the Mishnah says Elu. Elu means these 39. These are the Ovis Malachos. And you chayef maximum for the 39 Ovis Malachos that are listed here. But you would not be chayef for a tolda bimakom av. And apparently Rabbi Eliezer holds that a tolda is a separate Easter unto itself. It might be derived from the av, but it generates its own category as a malacha. So what we're up to here is chaser achas. And let's just learn a little bit more. We'll push ourselves to get to the Mishnah. Lafuki min Rabbi Yehuda, desanya Rabbi Yehuda Mosif es ashovet vehamedagdeik. Rabbi Yehuda has actually 41 malachas, not 39, because he adds another two avos malachos. One is shovet, and the other is medagdek. And these are different types of malachos in the context of ariga. So when you have the required number of shisi threads that have been set on the loom, there are many threads that are bound to overlap or become attached to one another. And he takes a shevet, a shovet, he takes a certain rod which is pointed and sharp, and he separates the threads in order to line them up properly. Now, the Chachamim would call this a tolda, and Rabbi Yehuda classifies it as an av. And according to the Rambam, this is an early stage in which he prepares the shasi, and two people hold the shasi threads taut. One beats the threads with a shevet, a rod, and the vibration causes many of the bunched up threads to fall into place properly. Then he picks up a karkar, which is a pointed rod, to align any remaining problematic threads individually. Now we have something called medagdek. Medagdek means beating. Beating the shasi threads, because after the orev threads, or thread I should say in the singular, is passed through the shasi threads, it has to be pulled tight so it will not lie too loosely on the cloth. If it's pulled too tight, then the orev is hit with a pointed rod in a number of places, increasing the amount of orev thread that he has. And that will make sure that it's not tight, it's not stretched too tightly. It can then merge properly with the rest of the cloth. Amrulo, the Chacham disagrees from Yehuda. Shovet hareu bichlal mesich, and medagdik hareu bichlal oreg. In other words, we have here not two ovos, but two toldos. Shovet, in which case he lines up the shasi threads with the rod that we spoke about, the shevet, that is a tolda of mesich. And the reason for that is, mesich is mounting the shasi on the loom, and if the shasi threads are not lined up properly, that's when he does this kind of action of shovet. So that's just a tolda of mesich, of lining up the shasi on the loom. And in the case of medagdek, this is part of the weaving process, and therefore it is a tolda. So the acts of lining up these shasi with a rod or beating the orev threads are considered toldos of their respective avos. And again, it's not similar to Zoreh Boreh Merakeid, which are considered separate avos, because those avos accomplish distinct processes and purposes. He starts with winnowing to remove the chaff, then he does borer to remove the stones, and finally he gets to merakit, which is sifting, in order to purify the flour. Those are three separate, distinct avos because they accomplish distinct purposes. Okay, then we're up to the Mishnah here on the bottom of Daf, Ayin Hayam and Beis, and that's where we'll pick it up, Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow.